Marcus Sahaba Online Radio, empowering the Ummah.
Bismillahi rahmani rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ahlan wa sahlan wa marhaban bikum, and welcome to Medical Matters with myself, Brother Suleiman Isop, every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. We do apologize for the transmission. We had a little bit of a technical issue, but nonetheless, alhamdulillah, through the grace and mercy of Almighty Allah, we are back on air. And we'd like to welcome our Dr. Amin Maldos. Dr. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam. Pleased to be on the show again.
Amin. Jazakallah khairan. And Doc, we do apologize to you for the delay. There was a technical fault on our side, but alhamdulillah, we sorted it out.
Alhamdulillah.
Okay, Doc, let's get cracking. Our topic for tonight is making the most of our autumn years. A very interesting topic indeed, Doc. Now, can you please explain to us, what do you mean by extending or making the most of my autumn years?
Right. Well, the autumn years naturally is later in life, you know, over 50 and going on towards 70 and maybe 80, and making the most of that, because, you know, people tend to feel this is the time that they've got to just relax, and then they actually, you know, don't give themselves the chance to enjoy life at all.
No, definitely. It's, you know, you have to look after yourself. You know, they say health is wealth. Now, yes. Doc, can you please explain, how do we extend our lifespan?
Well, all of these subtopics that we've listed are relevant to our main topic, you know, which is making the most of our autumn years. And I think we'll just take it one by one by one. As you've obviously seen, is extending my lifespan. We can talk about that. And apparently there are some doctors who, in researching the aging process, have come up with natural remedies to counter the aging process. For example, herbal medicine and naturopathy and visualization therapy. And what we need to do, I think, is to just look at these one by one by one as you know, factors that are inclined to speed up our aging process.
No, definitely. And, you know, sometimes when you look at a person and you ask them what is their age, and they tell you, like, oh, you know what, I'm in my 50s, and they'll be like, no, can never be. You know, you look so young for your age, you know?
Yes, you've come back again.
Gee. Doc, now, factors that are inclined to speeding up aging process, what are the factors?
Well, sure. There's an impact with boredom, for example, inactivity, loss of independence people feel, loneliness, where perhaps the partner has passed on. And, you know, this sort of gives them a negative look at life, and perhaps causes them to think, well, you know, my time is coming soon, instead of trying to just live a healthy life, enjoy their family, enjoy their children, enjoy their grandchildren.
Now, Doc, what is a naturopath doctor? Who is a naturopath doctor?
Sorry, a natural?
A naturopath doctor. N-A-T-U-R-O-P-A-T-H.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Let's have a look at the extending of lifespan. We'll get to that point, which you asked there. Now, scientists now believe that the potential human lifespan could actually extend to between 110 and 120 years, yet very, very few people even get beyond the age of 90. Now, true it is that the proportion of elderly people in the developed world is at a record high. But is this not due to comparatively low birth rates and, of course, a general improvement in the diet and the standard of living, medical care as well, and medicines to cope with heart problems, liver problems, bowel problems, colon, and other likely problems? And we'll be looking at most of these as we go on this evening.
Now, Doc, what is the do's and the don'ts of staying young?
The do's and the don'ts of the?
Of staying young. Staying young.
Oh, yeah. No, well, that's obviously to keep active, keep your mind active as well as your body, exercising, get on the right diet, eat the right food, have a healthy outlook, a positive outlook at life, and, you know, you can enjoy your life. You can enjoy your partner, even if you're in the latter years. You can enjoy your children. You can enjoy your grandchildren. And the main thing is just to have a positive outlook on life. That's the main thing.
Now, Doc, what is the orthodox or scientific viewpoint with regards to extending the lifespan of one's years?
Right. Well, scientists now believe that the potential lifespan could extend to between 110 and 120 years. Can you believe that? Yet, very, very few people actually get beyond the age of 90. So, true it is that the proportion of elderly people in the developed world is at a record high. This is a fact. And, you know, we put this down, obviously, to all the medication that we've got. The doctors have done a lot of research, and they're right on top of everything. And they know how to deal with the heart problems, and how to deal with liver, bowel, colon, and all the other problems. And, you know, as I said earlier on, we shall be looking at most of these as we go through the topic tonight.
Doc, with regards to hair care and retention of hair, is that correct?
Yes.
How do we look after one's hair?
Well, maintenance of a healthy head of hair, provided there are no obvious hair problems, simply keeping the scalp clean by washing regularly, perhaps 2 to 4 days for each wash, between each wash. And state of mind plays a significant role, of course, that if we expect to go into a decline in our 70s, then it's likely to happen. So while people in their 40s no longer consider themselves as middle-aged and expect to still look and feel good in their 50s and early 60s, that is the current retirement age, of course, in South Africa for women is 60 years and for men is 65 years. And they look at the specter of boredom facing them when they've taken their pension and now they're inactive. And they feel they've lost the independence. They've got an aimless life. They're not really getting anywhere. And eventually, loneliness and bereavement can also be a factor, which in fact impacts on the lifestyle and on the longevity of the folks, you know, having a past 60 and then going on to 70 and perhaps even 80.
Gee, no, definitely. Now, Doc, you know, previously we spoke about looking after one's hair and also, you know, the different types of diseases that one can cause for the hair to fall as well. Now, moving on to the next one, Doc, hand care. And, you know, specialized hand creams are available. But, you know, sometimes it does not agree with the skin as well. And we get the various skin irritation.
Yes. Yes, we're talking about heat rash here. That is a topic that one really, really needs to look at. And heat rash is a discomfort, but it's not a disease. Okay, it occurs when sweat becomes stuck in the pores and spreads into surrounding tissue, irritating it. As a result, you're not only overheated and sweaty, you also have tiny red or pink blister-like bumps that are extremely itchy on your chest, on your back, even your armpits, or in the creases of your elbows or your groin even. And this prickly heat should go away in 3 to 4 days without you having to do anything at all, short of staying cool and dry. wearing light cotton clothes, exposing the affected area to the air, that's important. If you want to speed up its exit, that is getting rid of its rash, or relieve the aching, alternative healers suggest something like, and I think it's a good one to write down for our listeners, that is lavender essential oil. All right, you can use that alone or with calendula. Now, essential lavender oil helps to normalize and to regenerate the skin cells, and it is very healing for any kind of skin problem, according to a doctor of herbalism in the States, in Santa Fe, in fact, New Mexico. You can use a drop or two of lavender, lavender oil directly on the rash 3 or 4 times a day, and you can also add a drop or two of lavender oil to calendula gel to give it even more healing powers, according to the doctor. So that's really, really interesting. Something to take a note of. That is the lavender oil.
Doc, apparently there are some doctors who are in the research field or researching the aging process and have come up with natural remedies to counter the aging process. That is via the herbal medicines, naturopathy, and visualization therapy. Now, Doc, could you please explain or can you look at one of the examples using herbal medication?
Yes, we've got quite a few that one could actually look at, but let's look at the Mexican herbalist, for example, and their claim on the herb, which is called and known as sarsaparilla. I'm going to spell that for our listeners, S-A-R-S-A-P-A-R-I-L-L-A, sarsaparilla, which is apparently available from specialist herb shops, believe it or not. And yeah, so the herb which one can use there is, as we said, sarsaparilla, and one can apply that. You can get it from the specialist herb shops, and you can apply that to the skin. You can use it regularly. You can use it daily, in fact. And yeah.
Doc, what impact would boredom, you mentioned boredom earlier, now what impact would boredom or inactivity and the loss of independence and also loneliness have in shortening one's life?
Yes, of course, I think this is something that's really, really, really a problem, because well, boredom, you know, suddenly your partner's perhaps not there, or you are not feeling that you're doing anything constructive, you stopped working, you're now sitting on pension, you're sitting on the veranda, and you're looking out, and you feel, you know, you're not really worth anything anymore. So you've got to get active, you've got to be involved. You don't have to do anything heavy. But it is very interesting that in exercising, you're actually keeping the body going. And that is really, really interesting. And the fact of the matter is you also need a good, clean diet. So those two things are very, very important, is the diet and it is the exercise. You've got to keep active to keep your body going. Take a walk around the block early morning. Get up an hour earlier. Go for a walk around the block. Say 3 or 4 times during the week.
And I know Doc always in our previous shows advocated that, you know what, one should at least take a 15-minute walk around the block. You know, it took at least once a week or twice a week. Doc does mention that one should keep the blood circulating within the body and to keep the body active as well. Now, continue.
Yes.
No, you.
Yes, I would extend that. I think once or twice a week is a little bit little. I think one needs to push it up to about 3 or 4 times a week. Get up an hour earlier. You know, we've said this on most of our shows, but it is very, very important to be active. You know, it's such If you just think of the way people work today, they get up, perhaps rushing to the car, get in the car, drive to work, work hard all day, perhaps sitting in an office, drive home again, and then sit in front of the TV. Now, that's going to cause an aging process because their bodies are not being active. But if they get up early in the morning and go for a walk three or four times a week, they can just go at their own pace. I think if they've got a problem, possibly they need to go see their doctor and say, look, is it okay if I start with a physical exercise? And the doctor will give them the clear green light, and away they go at their own pace, starting slowly, and perhaps walking with a friend or their wife and take a stroll around the block, and eventually they can really, really enjoy it, particularly if you've got even a park close by or a golf course close by. Get onto that and go for a walk, and you can really, really enjoy it. You'll be able to hear the birds singing. You'll be able to take in fresh air and really enjoy the beginning of a day before you actually get into the day.
Chino, definitely, Doc. Now, Doc, are these happenings really inevitable?
Yeah, that's that's quite a question. Yeah, they're not really inevitable. You know, it's going to happen if you're going to slow down. Going to happen if you are not exercising, if you haven't got an interest in life. You've got to, if you've been working and now suddenly you're on pension, you need to have something to fill that time. You can't just suddenly stop. You've got to keep active. You've got to keep your mind going. I think if your mind is going well, if you take up reading, you can even do a little course. But obviously, exercise is the bottom line. And I would love to add to that the fact that you need to also drink quite a bit of water. You need to drink 4 to 6 glasses of water per day. And something else I'd like to just throw in here, and that is what fruit can do for you. Fruit. Now, my suggestion is that you either have fruit as a separate meal, or you have your fruit before you have your main course. Because you see, what happens is that the fruit is digested very much more quickly, and it can't get past the food that is blocking it. This can cause wind, which is embarrassing, and you could lose a lot of nutrients also in that fruit. If you're eating it after a meal, so either make a full meal of fruit or eat your fruit before your main meal. Now, this is something that looks a bit backward, because normally you would have your meal and then you'd have maybe peach slices with peach juice. Now, it should be the other way around, and this is quite revolutionized.
Definitely, definitely. You know, fruit and a lot of things help to the blood circulate as well. And, you know, it gives you like that boost, the immune boosters. And I know Doc mentioned previously that we need a lot of vitamins in our body, like vitamin B12 and vitamin D, you know, and those are factors, and vitamins allow the body and the blood cells, the white blood cells and the red blood cells. And, you know, there was a name that I always liked, Doc. Bandits we used the name.
Yes,
but nonetheless, moving along, Doc, medical researchers have apparently shown that some primitive peoples who are living on the basic diets of natural foods such as fish and grain, who live to advanced ages and still feel healthy and energetic, and yes, have very little trouble by Western diseases such as arthritis and diseases.
Yes. Now, this is something that we really, really need to take note of, because the research has indeed shown that some primitive peoples living on sparse diets, as you said, of natural foods, and fish is mentioned, and grains or rice is mentioned, and in fact, they live to advanced ages. You've got people living perhaps in India, for example, and it's quite common to get people reaching 100 years old or even beyond that, and they're not eating all these foods that we're supposed to be eating today, but they are living on basic stuff. They're not eating beef or meat, they're eating fish, and they're planting their own veggies, and eating their natural foods. And I think this is obviously what we should be doing. and they live to advanced ages, and they feel healthy and energetic, and are seldom, very seldom troubled by the Western diseases of degeneration, such as arthritis and heart disorders. And nutrition, therefore, plays, and I want to repeat this, nutrition plays an important role in longevity, in living a long, long life. And our slogan, of course, for this show is, you are, you become what you eat. The diet is so, so important.
You know, definitely diet is very important. We always mentioned with regards, and we even did a the topic, Doc, on the type of foods that one needs to eat then to understand and to help the body. You know, we called it superfoods.
Yes.
Yes, I remember that there. Doc, can we have a look at the different type of headaches and what type of problems they cause to a person in their ages?
Right. Interesting question. Now, I would say that almost everyone experiences headaches at some time or other. And most headaches are caused by tension. Make a note of that. It's tension in the muscles of the scalp and the neck after periods of concentration or stress. And some headaches result from eating problems or alcohol. I'm sure our listeners are not having that second problem, but eating problems could be a problem. You know, if we haven't been taught and we're used to eating in a certain way, perhaps we need to revolutionize what we're eating. Now, other headaches are the forerunners of colds or flu. So there are different types of headaches. There's one for stress, which comes from stress. And, of course, there's this other one which could be a forerunner of colds or flu. Even menstruating women get headaches, and it's quite common. After a head blow, for example, it's very, very common, and or after concussion, and it can also be caused by sinus problems or problems involving the lower jaw muscles, which could be from your teeth grinding. You know, these are all sounds like funny things, but these things do happen, and that's good to identify them. Now, a sudden headache, which feels like a blow in the back of the head, often followed by unconsciousness, may indicate internal bleeding under the brain, known as a I'm going to spell it for you. Subarachnoid. Subarachnoid. Hemorrhage. Subarachnoid hemorrhage. Meningitis also produces a headache. It's aggravated by bright light and accompanied by fever and a stiff neck. And the headache caused by a brain tumor is the worst in the mornings or when you're just lying down, and may be associated with nausea and mental disturbances. However, all of these are rare. All of these are rare. And people don't complain about them very, very much. Thank goodness for that. But there is a warning here that we need to take note of. If a headache persists or recurs frequently, you need to see your doctor at once. Do not attempt to treat yourself. It could be something not too bad, but it could also be something quite serious. So if you're having a headache which is recurring again and again, then you need to see to it. Go to your doctor, let him test you, let him take x-rays, let him do whatever he likes, and so that he can put his finger on the problem and you can solve it. You don't need to sit with headaches recurring all the time.
Doc, a question that come in, it says, Assalamu alaikum, Doc, can you please let me know, is brown wheat bread healthy to consume? Jazakallah.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's one of my pet stories. You should reject white bread altogether. They are taking too much. I'll tell you why. They take too much out of the flour when they're making white bread, because in doing that, they lengthen the life of white bread on the shelf. Now, the ingredients that they don't take out and make the brown bread causes that to, in fact, have a shorter shelf life. So it's all a matter of money, and it's not a matter of trying to keep your customers healthy. So definitely brown bread and whole wheat bread, excellent, excellent. But try and avoid the white bread and the white flour products.
Doc, now I noticed a lot of people, especially younger generation, they suffer with a lot of migraines. Now, what could be the cause of migraines, Doc?
Look, it could be pressure on the brain. It could also be from stress. And it sounds to me more like a physical thing. So they definitely need, if they're getting it frequently, they need to get to their doctors. They need the doctor to examine them and to put his finger on the problem. They don't need to live with that. It's really unnecessary. And it could also be a sport injury. For example, you watch these fellows playing rugby, and the way they tackle each other and the way they get thrown onto the ground, they're going to have head problems. But if it's just a normal youth that's not getting involved in that sort of thing, then if he's having recurring headaches, then he needs to go and see the doctor.
Doc, and what about blood pressure headaches?
Yeah, that's also a good sign, because this is going to be something that the doctor will pick up straight away. If you're going to the doctor, you're getting headaches, you go to the doctor, he'll pick it up straight away that it's a blood pressure problem, and he will then address that.
So obviously, blood pressure headaches are caused by blood pressure, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Oh, no, that was a question that came through just after the question you answered previously. Doc, what is
perhaps, sorry, before we carry on, perhaps I could just add something there, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Blood pressure is normally caused by the fatty substances collecting in the veins and the arteries. Now, what one needs there is something that is based on fish oil, which clears out the arteries and the veins, and you're not going to get that blood pressure, not at all.
Okay, Jazakallah. Doc, there's something that's been going around recently. It's called the hay diet. Sounds weird, but can Doc please expound on this here?
Yes, the hay diet. It sounds rather that you've got to eat some hay, doesn't it?
Mm.
But it's got nothing to do with hay. In fact, the man who did the research, his surname is Hay. It's a Dr. William Hay. So Hay is actually his surname, and he devised a diet. And I'm going to go into this quite extensively, because it really, really is something that we need to address to ourselves. You know, it fits right in with the nutrition, which we said was so important. And we need to look at this. He devised a diet which was aimed at combating digestive problems, which often trouble the older folks. He recommends that, now listen to this one, he recommends that carbohydrates, starches, and sugars should not be eaten together with proteins and acid fruits at the same meal. He points out that protein stimulates the production of acid in the stomach, and that the acid interferes with carbohydrate digestion, which needs an alkaline medium. That sounds a bit involved, but there it is. While many foodstuffs contain both protein and carbohydrates, virtually all of them are 20% or more, one or the other, and they can be classified as such. Now, there are exceptions. The exceptions that he lists are peas, beans. Remember, we're looking here at carbohydrates and proteins and the difference between the two. He says the exceptions are peas, beans, lentils, and peanuts. And according to Dr. Hay, he excludes these from his diet. He says, however, modern vegetarian proponents now include them as proteins. That's interesting. Now, Hay's foods for a protein meal include chicken, mutton, game fish, including shellfish, eggs, cheese, yogurt, milk, and acid fruits such as apples and apricots and gooseberries and oranges and pears and prunes. So those are the protein types that we should eat separately from the carbohydrates. Now, he also lists carbohydrate meals, and he includes brown bread, which we've just discussed, and whole grain, which I did labor a bit there because I found it really, really interesting and really important. Also rice, but I would say brown rice. Sweet fruits and veggies, such as bananas, dates, figs, currants, raisins, sultanas, and potatoes. Now, Hayes, third group, so those are the two groups there. Now, the third group of neutral foods combines well with either the carbohydrate or the protein meals and consists of, right, here we go. This is the third group of neutral foods: nuts, that's excluding peanuts, butter, cream, egg. Well, I'd say egg yolks, actually. Olive oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, and also, interesting, this one, sesame seeds and sesame oils, and salads and herbs, and all the green and root vegetables, except potatoes and artichokes. Now, tests by a Russian physiologist proved that meat mixed with carbohydrates takes twice as long or longer to pass through the stomach, and that sluggish digestive action continues throughout the rest of the alimentary canal. So, conclusions on a Hayes diet. Hayes diet, therefore, gives some relief to people who suffer from indigestion, stomach and duodenal ulcers, and constipation. Now, on constipation, I'd like to just break a little brief note on this one. On constipation, I would say drink a glass of water or fruit juice or eat fruit prior to a meal. I mentioned that a little early on, to prevent wind and constipation. Now, that's very, very interesting. Some folks are prone to having wind, and it's really embarrassing. But if you're eating your fruit before you're eating your main meal, you get to shorten that. And also, we need to drink at least 4 to 6 glasses of water per day, and rather not during a meal, rather before a meal or in between meals. Any well-balanced diet taken in moderation, as recommended by Dr. Hay, promotes good health, and that's what we are after, avoiding obesity and heart disease and diabetes and arthritis. So this is how important our diet is. Those are all avoided by eating correctly and eating at the right time. And, of course, exercise. You can't just sit and eat and think you're going to be healthy. You've got to exercise. You've got to have enough liquid. And we're talking about water here, 4 to 6 glasses of water during the course of a day.
Doc, can you please explain what is a high-protein, low-carb diet?
Yeah, well, we've actually just passed that one. The high-protein, of course, is the meat, the fish, the chicken, and the low-carbohydrate, of course, is the cakes and the white bread and so on. So that is very, very interesting because that's, in fact, what we're promulgating on this show here, is that the white flour products are really, really a no-no. And I would also add to that, when we're looking at the protein side, that we should be concentrating on at least 3 meals per week, main meals of fish and of skinless chicken. You know, there's so much fat in the skin of a chicken. So skinless chicken, and we're looking also there at the fish. We're looking at your fish, very, very important. And I think that, as I said, you know, you need about 3 meals, main meals per week of fish.
Doc, is cow's milk, if boiled and consumed with cereal in the AM, in the morning, is it okay?
Yes. It is okay. It is okay to have cereals, particularly something like All Bran, for example. It's really, really good. And you're taking in fiber. You need fiber to have a good digestion. So, yes, don't overdo it. But, look, there are some folks who seem to be allergic to milk. That can be thrashed out with your doctor. But I think the average person can have your milk, a little bit of sugar, and your cereal. And that's a good start to the day.
Doc, now, the difference between white sugar and brown sugar, I know some people use canderel and sweetener and to replace their sugar in as a whole.
Yes, I don't agree with that. I would say, and I personally stick to brown sugar. It's not refined, and the brown sugar, if you're using it in moderation, is much, much, much better. I wouldn't go for candorel either. Go for the brown sugar, but use it sparingly. You're not going to put 3 or 4 teaspoons into a cup of tea. Rather, if you're taking 3 or 4 at the moment, just gradually cut them down until you can get up to 1, maybe 1.5 of brown sugar. It's not refined and it's healthier. And I can't see anything wrong with that in moderation.
A listener messaged, they're in their 60s and they're having digestive issues. What would Doc recommend?
Right. I think we could have just discussed that. That is the separation of the protein and the carbohydrate in your diet. And this I think is really, really the answer. They're mixing their foods. Their stomachs are battling to digest the protein, which takes longer than the carbohydrate. Perhaps they eating white flour products as well. So they need a diet which has, I think, mainly fish or mutton or skinless chicken with green leafy vegetables. And just on the vegetable side there, for the ladies that do a lot of cooking, I would recommend that you don't cook your green leafy vegetables for longer than you put them into hot water and you don't leave them in there for longer than 7 minutes, because what's going to happen is that you're going to lose all the valuable nutrients in that particular, perhaps spinach or cabbage. You're going to lose that. And what I further recommend to the ladies that do cooking for their families is that don't throw that water away. Once you've cooked veggies, keep that water and use it in the stew, because a lot of the nutrients get thrown away down the sink once you've cooked your vegetables. So there we go. You've got the vegetables and you've got the fish, I would say. What I'd recommend for the gentleman that's having a problem with indigestion is cut out the beef altogether and see how we go, and concentrate just on fish and skinless chicken. Just as a note here, beef, in fact, the housewife would cut away all the fat and cook the meat. But you know what? In the fibers of the meat, you've got just about as much fat as the fat that you've just cut away. So, I've given you quite a lot of information there, but I think just separate the protein and the carbohydrate as much as possible. Steer away from white flour products and steer away from too much beef. You want the odd braai, you can do that every second or third week, but don't spend too much time on the beef. I've got a friend who loves a lot of beef, but he looks like he's 9 months pregnant because his stomach just doesn't know what to do with it and it's just storing it all the time. So I hope that answers the question.
Doc, the same listener message and says that they have underactive thyroids.
Yes.
So will that with regards to the digestive issue?
Yes. No, look, the doctor would have to look at that. There is medication that can get the thyroid going.
Mm-hmm.
It is a sensitive thing, but a specialist would be able to sort that out for this gentleman.
Okay. Doc, wouldn't it be logical that the nutrition, that is the right nutrition, plays an important role in promoting longevity?
Yes, absolutely. Nutrition, that is the right nutrition, does play an important, a really important role in promoting longevity, together, of course, as I said earlier on, with exercise. Now, therapists promote one of three different pathways. The first one is a herbal medicine pathway. The second one is a naturopathy, that's naturopathy, and the so-called visualization therapy. Let's have a look at these. They're really interesting, and it's going to answer this gentleman's question. Under the herbal medicine approach, all right, remember we said there were three. We're looking at the first one is the medicine approach. The Russian scientists believe, listen to this one, that the herb ginseng, G-I-N-S-E-N-G, the ginseng strengthens the body's resistance to illness, to tiredness, to stress, to aging. That's really interesting. Now, Siberian ginseng, the roots are a mild stimulant and are believed to improve memory and to protect against cell and collagen damage. Collagen, of course, is the substance that forms the connecting tissue, which binds together the cells of the skin, the tendons, the ligaments, the bones, and the cartilages. And then another interesting one here, we've looked at the Russian and the Mexican, the Korean ginseng is believed to help rid the body of poisons and to ease tiredness and depression. But here's a medical alert. Western doctors feel that people with high blood pressure should not be taking ginseng. So that is a very, very interesting point.
Doc, our final question with regards to the Mexican herbalist that you mentioned and they claim on the herbs sarsa and parila, which is apparently yes. available from specialist herbalist shops.
Okay, perhaps I should just spell that word for our listeners. It's sarsa parila. S-A-R-S-A P-A-R-I-L-L-A. It's apparently, as I said earlier on, I seem to remember, it's available from specialist herb shops. Right, so sarsaparilla is known to have the same restorative effect on the hormone replacement therapy, which is known as HRT, with none of the potential side effects. But something to note here, the herb, that is sarsaparilla, also helps to restore the function of the reproductive system. That's interesting, especially in men. It is apparently less potent than pure hormone treatment and therefore less disturbing to the system. We should be looking at this question of diet a little bit later. I think let's just have a look-see, and perhaps we need to close off with this question. How do I make a sarsaparilla drink? Well, by putting 25 grams of sarsaparilla in 600 milliliters of water, right? Then you boil it for 25 minutes, you strain it, and you drink it. Herbalists believe that this herb is best taken by 40 to 50-year-olds for a period of 2 to 6 weeks. 2 tablespoons, 40 milliliters twice per day. Let me just repeat both of these. The first one we said was 25 grams of sarsaparilla in 600 milliliters of water. And the herbalists believe that the herb is best taken by 40 to 50-year-olds for a period of 2 to 6 weeks. 2 tablespoons, that's 40 milliliters, twice per day.
We say Jazakallah khairan to you, Doc, and looks like we're going to have a few parts to this particular topic, inshallah.
Inshallah.
Amin, we say Jazakallah khairan to our Dr. Amin Melrose for always making time and being available on our program. Once again, we do apologize for the later starting transmission with our show this evening. We did have a few hiccups, but alhamdulillah, we did manage to get it sorted. Doc, jazakallah khairan for your time once again. Fi amanillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam. You're very welcome.
And that is a wrap from us at the Medical Matters with myself, Brother Sulaiman Isub, every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. Next up, inshallah, will be our Isha Adhan, and thereafter will be the repeat of this morning's Bliss of Marriage with Maulana Zayed Khan and Mufti Abdul Qadir Hussain Saab. And thereafter will be Sheikh Anwar Al-Awlaqi Al-Shaheed. And then the lecture at 11 to 12 will be Who Are the Ulul Albab and What Are the Signs by Maulana Yunus Patel Rahmatullah Ali. Jazakallah khairan, fi amanillah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You are listening to Markaz al-Sahaba, the voice of Ahl al-Sunnah wal-Jama'ah.